ESPN Daily is presented by QuickBooks. Success starts with Intuit QuickBooks.
The Rams are going to win it. Clock is at 20 seconds. The benches now have emptied and the players are at midfield.
Here's the snap, here's the knee. The Bengals will not call a timeout. The sidelines empty. Rings for the Rams. A Lombardi Trophy.
Tres, dos, uno. Termina el tiempo. Termina el encuentro. Los Angeles Rams, campeones del Super Bowl 56.
On Sunday night, all around the world, you saw the Los Angeles Rams beat the Cincinnati Bengals to win Super Bowl 56. And there were physically dangerous miracles and unapologetic macro doses of nostalgia and shocking cameos. And that was just the halftime show. So today, Bill Barnwell walks us through how the biggest season finale in American television really went down and what to make of the very big names who've been threatening to retire after it. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, February 14th. This is ESPN Daily.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Bill Barnwell, I am back in New York. I just saw you on Saturday. We got brunch. I had the worst granola I've ever had in my life. You were there for that. But now I'm back at home and you are still in LA. And the first question I have for you after this Super Bowl that has so many storylines running through it, so many existential crises running through it. My first question is 50 Cent okay?
I mean, Pablo, you're around the same age as me. We're both around the same age as 50 Cent, maybe a little younger than 50 Cent, I think. One of the most impressive athletic achievements of the 2021 NFL season, 50 Cent hanging that long upside down as he did in his video for In the Club so long ago and then performing for 2 minutes. I don't know if you noticed, Pablo, but like everyone over 40 was sitting down for most of that set. And I don't blame them, frankly, given how much energy it takes to lay like a bat, basically, upside down for 2 minutes.
How to do just one half of that Spider-Man scene. You know, they're just like hanging, waiting to kiss somebody instead. No, he's just here to remind us that 50 Cent will not be denied, even when gravity is fighting very hard against his wishes.
I did not realize that he was just waiting for someone to kiss him. That really puts a different sort of color on In the Club all these years later.
Yeah, it's a real Sleeping Beauty vibe, Bill. It's a romantic tale, really. And by the way, like, there was romance shooting through all of this. I mean, Bill, after this game, I mean, to get to the actual literal romance, Taylor Rapp proposes to his girlfriend, Van Jefferson's wife, goes into labor. He's rushing off. The Rams, by the way, won this game, catching you guys up on that, 23-20 over the Cincinnati Bengals. And everybody seems to be dealing with major life decisions. There are, like, rumors of retirements that we'll get to. But I guess, how do you describe what we just watched, Bill? We're at the end of the NFL season. What the hell was this?
Yeah, I mean, this really felt like the most Los Angeles game I can imagine, right? You know, you have this $5 billion stadium. You have a home team that was kind of not the underdog in terms of the play and in terms of the betting line, but certainly a team that was cheered for less for the vast majority of this game. It felt like a Bengals home game walking around Los Angeles and, you know, certainly inside the stadium as well from reports. And it just felt like the game itself was secondary to kind of seeing the stars happen, you know, come through and seeing these big moments popping up. I missed kind of some mediocrity around that. Yeah, the spectacle of the whole thing felt like it was bigger than the actual game itself, and it felt like
you mean the Rock? The Rock was not a subtle garnish on this dish.
The Rock attempting to filibuster the start of the Super Bowl and daring Roger Goodell to come out of the stands to stop him felt like sort of a hint at what was coming for The Rock, maybe in terms of a presidential run in the years to come.
Absolutely.
But yeah, this felt like a game where it was basically star watching for several hours until the biggest names and the biggest players showed up. And for the Rams, fortunately, eventually, by the time we got to the fourth quarter, we got to see a star or two.
Yeah, so we'll get to the game-winning drive that Matthew Stafford and Cooper Kupp won Super Bowl MVP, like what they did in a second here. But this was another close game in a postseason in which literally all of them, from the divisional round on at least, were close games. And the way it officially ends truly is with the guy, I think, who maybe should have won MVP, Bill. The star who was the most feared on this field. What did Aaron Donald do to the Cincinnati Bengals tonight, Bill, on that last play of the game and also like throughout this entire thing?
Yeah, I mean, Pablo, even when Aaron Donald was not actively sacking Joe Burrow, the specter, the possibility, the threat of Aaron Donald was absolutely overwhelming and informing every decision the Bengals made throughout this game. I mean, from the very start of the game, we saw Joe Burrow getting the ball out as quickly as possible. He averaged 2.41 seconds with the football in his hands, second shortest average pass attempt for Joe Burrow this season. We saw an offense that was built around protecting Joe Burrow, trying to spread the Rams out, working out of empty. And then as the game wore on, we saw Aaron Donald and the Rams were going to take over. We saw them move Aaron Donald around a bit. We saw more sort of lopsided rush possibilities. We're having three guys on one side of the center. We saw the Bengals try to react by basically doubling, even triple teaming Aaron Donald at times. By the end of the game, it just did not matter. Aaron Donald was so dominant.
Burrow under pressure. They get him at the 20-yard line. Heat was on, and Donald is right there.
He was so unstoppable that the Bengals just did not have an answer for the best player on the field, if not the best player in the National Football League.
Yeah, I mean, watching the Bengals offensive line, which we knew was going to be the massive weakness in this game, even more fully resemble like a particularly cruel nature video when you just watch prey get devoured and picked apart live on camera. I mean, Bill, how bad was this for Cincinnati in very blunt terms here?
I mean, we're talking about one of the worst performances you can imagine. ESPN's pass block win rate statistic measures how effectively an offensive line blocks for a quarterback for the first 2.5 seconds of a pass play. The Bengals finished with a 14% pass block win rate across their line. That's the worst by any team in any game in the 2021 season. So that should tell you, when Joe Burrow did not get the ball out quickly, the Bengals were the worst offensive line in the NFL in any game all year versus this Rams front. And to be fair, it wasn't just Aaron Donald. It was Von Miller.
Rams rush 5. Pocket crumbling. Burrow will have to eat it again. Sacked inside his 30. Von Miller arrives and now a flag.
It was Leonard Floyd. It was A'Shaun Robinson. It really was a group effort, but so much of it started with Aaron Donald and how the Bengals reacted to Aaron Donald and what that opened up for the players around him.
So it does sound like we are both in agreement here. Aaron Donald should have been Super Bowl MVP, but I do want to doff my cap to just the absurdity of Cooper Kupp's existence at this point, Bill.
Stafford from under center, steps back, throws the fade, back shoulder. Cooper Kupp's got it! Cooper Kupp brings it in! Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, LA!
You know, he's Offensive Player of the Year. He wins the Triple Crown, receiving statistics. He is the guy with the trophy tonight. What impresses you about him after seemingly, you know, he's done as much as he could possibly do to impress us?
Yeah, I mean, it really felt sort of like the Aaron Donald thing, where it was not just that he was catching the ball for this game, as much as he was, you know, as much as the gravity of Cooper Kupp was informing what the Bengals wanted to do on defense. And that was creating opportunities for Odell Beckham. I think that, you know, sort of the focus placed on Cooper Kupp was creating one-on-one opportunities for Odell Beckham, and he had those two big plays early in the game before suffering what appeared to be a serious knee injury and having to leave. And I think there was a stat from Nathan Jahnke of Pro Football Focus, he put on Twitter that I feel like really encapsulates how dominant Cooper Kupp was and how he was sort of the closer for the Rams during this postseason. In the fourth quarter of the playoffs this year, Cooper Kupp was targeted 12 times, caught 12 passes for 208 yards, two touchdowns, and Matthew Stafford had a perfect passer rating when targeting his star receiver. So it felt like, you know, even in this game, Cooper Kupp kind of went missing for stretches. The Rams really had to kind of try and hit the other receivers in this game and sort of deal with the fact that the Bengals were taking Cooper Kupp away. But then I think at some point they just said, screw it. The ship might go down, but it's going to go down with us trying to get the ball in Cooper Kupp's hands. And we saw, of course, that fourth and one jet sweep that extended the game to Cooper Kupp. And then we saw multiple completions to Cooper Kupp in the fourth quarter. You know, I would have picked Aaron Donald for MVP, but I think for the rest of his career now, Cooper Kupp is going to have a reputation as a guy who can finish a game for you. Like, I think there's running backs who usually have that kind of reputation, like a Jerome Bettis was a closer. I think Cooper Kupp is a closer in an entirely different way now.
But the guy who was the preeminent closer in this specific game, Bill, had been Joe Burrow. And now I wonder how we grade him, how his story changes, because he gets sacked 7 times. That's the most ever, tied for it in a Super Bowl. The last of them, by the way, we watched Joe Burrow scream in agony as his right knee got pinned underneath Von Miller. How do you grade Joe Burrow in this game?
I thought he did a pretty good job. I mean, clearly, you could tell from the first snap on, he had that internal clock thing for quarterbacks where it was, oh God, I have to get the ball out quickly or I'm going to die. And like you see that at times, and it's a good instinct to have if you're a quarterback, because as this game wore on, Joe Burrow kept getting hit more and more as he was trying to make plays. And they left a couple plays on the field early. There was that first fourth down in the first half where Joe Burrow had a wide open receiver in the flat and just threw the ball to Jamar Chase because he wanted to get the ball out as quickly as possible. But I think Pablo, as the game did wear on and as he was hit more, and especially after that hit from Von Miller, it felt like Joe Burrow was dramatically weakened. I think after that play where he got bent around, seemed to suffer a knee injury, even though he walked off, even though he was able to make it back on the field, he did not have the same zip on his passes. You know, did that make the difference? I think it's tough to say. It wasn't a dominant offense during the postseason. It was just good enough to get by. And maybe, you know, Joe Burrow suffering that injury and not being 100% did hurt them. I mean, you know, maybe if this were a regular season game, maybe Joe Burrow would have come out. I mean, Eric Weddle, the veteran safety for the Rams, I believe the reports are that he ruptured a pec in the first quarter of this game and just put a shoulder harness on and kept playing. Like, that's a normal thing people do. I mean, the Super Bowl has a very strange effect on people in terms of their ability to play through injuries.
Yeah. And I mean, Eric Weddle presumably is done with his football career now. Yes. He was sort of leaving all of it, embodying that cliche of leaving all of it out on the field. But Bill, I'm curious how the Bengals might have helped Joe Burrow more. And one of the things that I was monitoring here was the fact that they attempted, I believe, 0 screen passes in this game, which is one of the more reliable ways to slow down a life-threatening pass rush. So what was the deal there?
Yeah, it felt like they really did not even trust their linemen to get out on screens. And maybe they didn't think that Joe Burrow would have enough time if the linemen let the Rams defense through to try and set up a screen. Maybe they just didn't think that they could pull it off at a high level. We saw a lot of throws to the running backs. I mean, Joe Mixon had a bunch of targets. Right. We saw Samaje Perine have targets. Chris Evans got a target on an early third down. So they were comfortable throwing the ball at their backs. But, you know, you would have figured as the game wore on, if there was ever going to be a situation where it was obvious for someone to call a screen, that would have been the situation. And the Bengals did not have a screen seemingly ready in their playbook to call. So I figured we'd see a few. And the fact that we didn't see any of them was pretty surprising to me.
And so as we begin to sort of dissect here the legend of Joe Burrow as it stands after he loses the first big elimination game of his, like, post-pubescent life, it seems, the question also emerges, like, where was Jamar Chase, his buddy from LSU, the guy who's been the bleep it, I'm going to throw it up there, he's down here somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like, you know, early in this game we saw a long, incredible, I would say, catch by Jamar Chase on a long pass from Joe Burrow. And it felt like the Rams were very conservative with their defense on this game. I feel like they really wanted to try and take away the big plays, force Joe Burrow to march the ball down the field. Now, yes, he had two big plays, one of these spectacular Ja'Marr Chase catch in the first quarter. The second most impressive athletic achievement in this game after the 50 cent hanging upside down for 2 minutes situation. But also the T. Higgins play, the long T. Higgins touchdown.
Burrow now scrambling, fires deep downfield for Higgins.
Oh,
jumps
baby.
Up, pushes nice. Over his defender, catches the ball, runs it into the end zone. There's no penalty flag.
No.
A 75-yard touchdown. Burrow to Higgins.
Wasn't really a deep throw, but more a play where Jalen Ramsey, who was in coverage, got turned around by a very illegal face mask that was not called on the play.
So, yeah, 75-yard touchdown catch and run as a result of that non-call.
Yes. So, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like the Chiefs game from the regular season where the Bengals were clearly attacking downfield. The plan was a lot of shorter stuff, a lot of throws where, you know, you're getting the ball to safe opportunities for safe completions and working towards the middle of the field. And that's not really Ja'Marr Chase's game. I mean, he's an incredible player after the catch. And we saw some stuff after the catch later in the game for a first down. But, you know, it wasn't like this game was set up for him to be totally dominant.
So on the other side of things, in terms of their receivers, when Odell Beckham Jr. goes down, Bill, in the second quarter with his non-contact injury, he had scored by this point the first touchdown of the game, had 52 yards receiving, was Stafford's biggest weapon, seemingly, before he had to leave the game. You think this is how this all goes bad for the Rams. But I want to fast forward to that last drive, that 15-play, 79-yard drive that Matthew Stafford went on, which allowed him to join Eli Manning, apparently, as the only quarterbacks with three game-winning drives in a single postseason, Bill. Playoff legends, immortals here we're dealing with now. So when Cooper Kupp is lining up and there's this fade, the go-ahead goal line fade to Kupp, and Eli Apple is just, you know, what was Eli Apple doing there? Did he? How do you assess what happened on that play?
You had the greatest wide receiver in football at the moment on one side of the field, and you had a guy who was foolish enough to challenge the entire city of New Orleans for their bad food on Twitter a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, the anti-gumbo take was bold, even for a cornerback.
Very confusing. I mean, you have to have real confidence to say, actually, yeah, New Orleans, your food is what's wrong with you. Very, very conspicuous trolling from Eli Apple, but he's been the weak point for this defense for the entire postseason. I mean, they have so much talent, so much consistency around the football, and we saw two touchdowns in this game really prey on Eli Apple. First, the Cooper Kupp touchdown in the back of the end zone, where Eli Apple got drawn in to the backfield by play action, and they threw behind him for a touchdown.
Here's a play fake. They roll right. Cooper cuts in the end zone. Stafford sees him. Back pylon caught. Cooper clutch. The most complete receiving season in NFL history now includes a Super Bowl touchdown.
And then, I mean, once I saw Cooper Kupp lining up one-on-one against Eli Apple, I have to admit, I don't always see things in advance. I'm not a football seer. I'm not Tony Romo. That you could see what was happening from the moment they were about to snap the ball. It was going to be a back shoulder throw to Cooper Kupp, and that's exactly what happened. Just a question of whether it was going to be a fade or a back shoulder throw, and it was back shoulder for a touchdown. You know, it's just not a good matchup. It was the one weakness, really, in this Cincinnati defense that I thought played really well, frankly, throughout the vast majority of this football game. And we saw the Rams hit it for two touchdowns in the red zone when they desperately needed big plays.
Yeah, that was how the Rams took the 23-20 lead with a minute 25 left in the game. But before that happened, Bill, I'm curious what you thought of what Sean McVay had been dialing up, because it seemed like they would not stop running the ball, especially on early downs, handing it off to Cam Akers over and over and over again. And obviously they emerge victorious Super Bowl champions. Was this all part of some grand strategy by McVay? What was this in your mind?
It seemed like a grand strategy to stop people talking about how smart he is. Like, if this was a way, this was like the, when like the class genius gets called a nerd and says, I'm going to show you what kind of nerd I am. And they fail a test deliberately, even though they know the answers.
Yeah.
That's what this felt like, Pablo. I mean, it was shocking, because Sean McVay even went into halftime and told the broadcast that they needed to improve their performance on early downs after running the ball a ton in the first half on first and second down. And they came back out in the second half. They threw an interception on the first play, an unlucky pick off of a receiver's hands, and then went straight back to the run for the vast majority of this game. I mean, if the first 18 rush attempts in this game, Pablo, were not positive plays for the Rams. They did not keep themselves on schedule for the first 18 rushes of this game. They got two first downs on the ground, one of which was the Cooper Kupp jet sweep on fourth and one that kept their season alive with a little bit of hindsight. And then Cam Akers finally got a first down to make it first and goal before all the penalties popped up in this game. They averaged 1.9 yards per carry, Pablo. Like, you have to almost it's hard to do that by accident. Like, you just stumble into a few yards here or there. The Rams, in terms of advanced metrics by expected points added, they added 9.2 points to the Bengals total. Like, the difference between the Rams blowing the Bengals out and winning a very close game was the Rams running the ball terribly for the vast majority of this football game. So I feel like the Bengals deserve a lot of credit. They were great on defense. They made play after play against the interior of the Rams offensive line. But for a guy who is a genius on offense, widely regarded as one of the smartest people in football, Sean McVay has basically seen his rushing offense buried in the ground now in two consecutive Super Bowls by the Patriots and now by the Bengals. So please, if Sean McVay, if you get back to the Super Bowl for a third time, just throw the ball. You traded two first-round picks for Matthew Stafford. Just do what you want to do in the long run. Don't almost lose the game because you have to give Cam Akers 18 carries.
Is that what this is, though? A matter of just principle? Like, I know the rushing attack is key to what Sean McVay wants to do.
Sure.
But you're saying that he is dangerously faithful to that specific philosophy.
I mean, I think it's a couple things. And number one, it's hubris. Like, I think there is this thing in Sean McVay's head where the Rams are a run-heavy, bulldozing, physical football team. You know, like, they're the Niners or they're the 1990 New York Giants. Like, they're just not. It's just not what they're good at. But the other thing was that it was math, Pablo. I mean, the Bengals, everything I've seen so far, and I want to go back and watch the game again, certainly, but the Bengals were giving them run-friendly boxes. The Bengals were kind of daring them to run, and Sean McVay was saying, okay, well, I have the math in my favor. I'm going to keep running the football. And it felt like, you know, the guy at the blackjack table who says, oh, well, I'm going to stand on 17, and the dealer was giving them 20 or getting 21 every single time. It just did not work out for them time after time after time, even though it felt like, from McVay's perspective, they were in positive run situations. So I think at some point, you just have to accept that you're not going to be effective, even when you have the numbers in your favor, and adapt. But Sean McVay kept going to that well until, you know, it almost cost them the football game.
Wait, so Sean McVay, I'm realizing the key to understanding him now. Sean McVay, the nerd who desperately wants to be proven to have jock credibility, Bill. This actually is beginning to add up now, I'm realizing.
There's a lot of metaphors being mixed here, Pablo. I'm not sure any of them make sense, but, you know, in the long run, I felt like the Rams got to stuff on offense that made sense and worked. And unlike the Chiefs, who struggled in the second half of that game, eventually found a solution, but then didn't sort of pull the trigger at the last second and pull out that game, went into overtime and then lost, the Rams couldn't kick a field goal. They couldn't settle for a tie and going to overtime. They had to score a touchdown. And eventually, through maybe some questionable penalty calls and the magic of Cooper Kupp versus Eli Apple, found that game-winning touchdown.
All right, Bill, after the break, we get into all of these people who have used this game to threaten to stop playing football altogether.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Bill, we've been very sober-minded here, dissecting how the Rams didn't necessarily maximize all the opportunities in front of them in this Super Bowl. But I am curious, given that Matthew Stafford is now Super Bowl champion, Matthew Stafford, how has this changed how you understand him, if at all? I mean, he's 34 years old. This was an experiment, an all-in experiment in which he was the centerpiece as the quarterback. What did this game do for you in terms of how you think about him?
I don't think it changed how I feel at all. Like, I think there'll be certainly some public perception changing of Matthew Stafford. But if you watch what he actually did in this game, it was the same guy we've seen all season. He threw two interceptions in this game, one of which was not really his fault, not a great throw. But the first one was his fault. It was a bad decision, did not take a check down to set up a field goal, tried to throw it deep, tried to throw it into a window that did not exist, and got picked by Jesse Bates, possibly costing his team 3 points, which ended up being pretty critical when we got to the final drive of this game. We saw him miss some throws during the second half. We saw him get banged up on plays where maybe he didn't need to get banged up. But what we did see were some absolutely incredible throws at times. Certainly, touchdown pass to Odell Beckham, an inch-perfect throw on a wheel route.
Here comes third down and three. Spins it right side, looking for Odell Beckham Jr. He high points the football and has the six. Touchdown, OBJ.
And then the no-look slant to Cooper Kupp for 22 yards in that final drive. I think one of the best throws you will ever see in a Super Bowl. Just a absolutely inch-perfect throw to a guy who was not open, putting the ball in a place where he was open. Matthew Stafford is capable of those throws, and very few quarterbacks in football are. There's just only so many guys who have that vision, have the arm strength to pull that off. And Matthew Stafford has always been capable of that. He's been capable of the terrible stuff. You don't know what's going to happen with him from drive to drive, but you'll take that floor sometimes if it means you get that ceiling. And certainly the Rams kind of got to see both of those during this game, and fortunately got to see the ceiling side of Matthew Stafford right at the exact time they needed it.
Yeah, Bill, it does feel like the Rams, hearing you talk about this, it feels like they won this game through attrition. Like, they are the last team standing at the end of this massive, supersized season. And I'm wondering if that is something that you understand as, you know, this is just how it works sometimes. Sometimes you're not going to get a champion that blows your socks off in the way that, you know, some teams have.
This sounds like we're settling, Pablo. Do you think we're settling in the 2020 NFL season?
Oh, I think we might be settling, Bill.
This is just like, we see the Rams and we're saying we can fix them. We can make them better.
We see them and we're like, you know what? That was good enough.
It's better to have a champion than be lonely and stay at home at night. I mean, you know, I feel like it is a battle of attrition. And certainly last year with the Bucks, for example, we saw that team be the healthiest team by the end of the year. They won the Super Bowl in part because the Chiefs were down multiple starting offensive linemen and a healthy Bucks defense just ate them up as that game went along. And here, I mean, the Rams are not 100%. Obviously, they lost Robert Woods earlier in the year. They lose Beckham during this game. Tyler Higbee was not healthy. They were down to their third string tight end at times. But the important part of that team, the part that mattered in this game, was the defensive line. And the defensive line was healthy and present and accounted for and dominated this game by the time we got to the fourth quarter. So the Rams were kind of the last team standing because they had so many of their stars left on the field as we got to the final few minutes of this football game.
Well, this is, I mean, in their defense, Bill, right? This is what they were built for, right? Yes. They went all in and it paid off. And now, apparently, a bunch of key people involved in this organization have been very seriously contemplating getting out of this relationship personally. Diana Russini, our colleague, had interviewed Sean McVay. And McVay talked to our colleague, Diana Russini, talking about how he doesn't want to be a coach at age 60, how he is very interested in getting into television. And these rumors that were swirling culminated in the post game when he says, that he's not going anywhere now. So Bill, what is the strategy here on behalf of Sean McVay, if there is one? What did you make of this whole news cycle?
Yeah, normally, Pablo, when a coach says stuff like this, I assume something is wrong, they're unhappy, and they want more power. And, you know, I don't think that's really the case here. I think Sean McVay is in a good spot even before, of course, winning the Super Bowl. It seems to be a pretty amicable organization between how things are going with him and with Les Snead. I think McVay has a fair amount of power, even if he doesn't necessarily have, you know, personnel control in his contract the way some other coaches have. And maybe he wants that. Maybe in 3 or 4 years, maybe up to the next time they don't win the Super Bowl, Sean McVay will have that happen. But to me, I sort of think this is just someone who is tired. I mean, this is someone who has been working really hard for 5 seasons now. A guy who has been in the playoffs, I think, 4 times in those 5 years, made 2 Super Bowl runs during the pandemic, which obviously has been exhausting for everyone. You know, Sean McVay's, I think this is the 3rd year in a row he's trying to get married after having 2 prior weddings delayed because of COVID. It wouldn't shock me if he wanted to go to TV. Now, granted, I don't think he's about to go to TV tomorrow. I would be surprised if he left the Rams this offseason, even after winning a Super Bowl. But I think for a coach who is so young and for an organization that I'd be looking at, you know, oh, we're going to have this coach for 20 years because he's so young and has so much in front of him, I think there is going to be a point, whether it's this year or 3 years or 5 years from now, where Sean McVay does retire. And I think we're closer to the end of Sean McVay's Rams career than we are to the beginning. And maybe that's a surprise. I don't think that was really public, you know, as recently as this season. You know, I think we've heard it, like you said, you know, sort of more over whispers the weekend here in Los Angeles. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just fascinating to me that a guy whose job is professional strategist uses the Super Bowl as a platform to say to the world something that absolutely changes the trajectory as projected of his career. It seems not coincidental. But at the same time, 2 of his players, these 2 very important figures to the Rams, one of whom we expect to retire, Andrew Whitworth, their offensive lineman, and the other, Aaron Donald, the aforementioned Thanos of professional football, who might be the best player in the sport today, are both possibly going to be done with professional football as of tonight. So let's deal with them separately. With Whitworth first, because that's the one we expect. What should the kids out there know, Bill? The kids who weren't really sure who Eminem was. What should they know about Andrew Whitworth and what he did in his life?
Oh, man. Just like Eminem, a real trailblazer. you know, should have a movie made about his life. Inspirational. Certainly in so many ways. I mean, just an awesome football player. Like, Andrew Whitworth is a dude who, you know, there's just not offensive linemen who play this late into their careers, let alone play at a high level. And Andrew Whitworth has been doing that for years now. I mean, you know, Sean McVay, the first offseason he was in Los Angeles, he went out and signed Andrew Whitworth. And it was a guy where it was, okay, well, this guy's at the end of his career. Maybe he'll be good for a year. And he's been an excellent football player for the vast majority of the last 5 seasons. And the Rams will miss him dearly. I mean, they have not spent a lot of money or a lot of draft capital on their offensive line. They've been sort of hanging on for dear life with Andrew Whitworth, and it's going to be a totally different situation if he is not in lineup. And also on top of that, Eric Weddle, the safety who they took out of retirement, I believe is also retiring after this game now that he's won the Super Bowl. But the big story here, Pablo, like you mentioned, is Aaron Donald, because they were not.
Bill, Aaron Donald is 30. Andrew Whitworth is 40. Yes. The 30-year-old guy isn't supposed to be the guy saying, I'm done, goodbye.
Yes, it was strange because there was not any reports before about 5 p.m. today, about an hour before the game, that Aaron Donald was considering retirement. I mean, if you watched the game, and I'm assuming you did if you're listening to this podcast, you probably know that Aaron Donald does not need to retire. He is not someone who is lacking or declining. I mean, he was the best player on the field in the final game of the season, and I would say he won the Rams the Super Bowl with his play.
Rams creepy. They rush for it. Burrow to throw for it. He's hit. He's sacked. He flings it away on 4th down. Aaron Donald got there. Donald takes his helmet off in celebration.
Aaron Donald is 30, and we have seen superstar players who could still do it, who are still in the prime of their careers, retire around this age. Patrick Willis of the 49ers retired right around this time. I think he was 29 when he retired. Calvin Johnson, of course, the legendary receiver for the Lions, retired right around this point in his career. So I would be surprised if Aaron Donald retired, but it was pretty conspicuous that even though Sean McVay was coming out after the game and saying, I'm not going anywhere, whenever Aaron Donald was asked, he was not giving that same sort of answer.
No, he was talking about how he wants to be in the moment. He wants to be present and taking all of the confetti, all of which you say if you want to be present and also don't want to actually admit what you're planning for your future. Mm-hmm. And Bill, if his future is out of football, if that's where this goes, what is Aaron Donald's career like? Like, what does it look like to you if it ends here at age 30?
I mean, he's still one of the best players who's ever lived. A once-in-a-generation player in terms of just how uniquely dominant he was. I think he also sort of ushered in, he popularized a kind of archetype in football. Like, I think that undersized but really muscular and really physically imposing defensive tackle, there are other guys like him, but nobody, of course, who's as good in that role as Aaron Donald was. So to me, I think if this is it, I mean, we have a guy who's won multiple Defensive Player of the Year awards, a guy who has been now a Super Bowl champion, to me, the best player on the field in a Super Bowl. You know, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, but I think it really, you know, reinforces just how all in the Rams were this season. If they lose not only their best offensive lineman, but also maybe their best player on either side of the ball in Aaron Donald.
Yeah, the whole all in, let's sell off the future to buy maximum pleasure in the present. It does make sense if all of those guys are going to be done with football as of this offseason. It does sort of explain that experiment. But I want to ask you also about like how the Cincinnati Bengals are set up to move forward, Bill. Like, what's your forecast for them in terms of whether this is a team that we can expect to see making postseason runs?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're obviously not going anywhere. Joe Burrow is still going to be really good for a long time. It's only his second season. And I think there's a really obvious point to hit, right? I mean, this is a team that should put every draft pick they have, all of their free agent money should go into fixing the offensive line. Like, yes, they have this one obvious significant flaw that if they can fix, I think they're going to be right back where they were this season. But Pablo, to be fair, like, I think we're also all more optimistic about people's chances of coming back than maybe we should be. I mean, Dan Marino made it to the Super Bowl in his second season. Mm. And you would have figured, okay, Dan Marino just won MVP. He's phenomenal. He's going to be back six or seven times. He never made it back to the Super Bowl. Carson Wentz and the Eagles won a Super Bowl in Carson Wentz's second season. He got hurt, of course, that year, but he was coming back. You figured, okay, the Eagles and Carson Wentz are going to be a dynasty for the next decade. They're going to be perennial Super Bowl contenders. Well, Carson Wentz never made it back, never won a playoff game with the Eagles, is now maybe about to be cut by the Indianapolis Colts. That's how Carson Wentz's career has gone since that game. You know, we can never assume that a team is going to get back just because their quarterback is young. I think the Bengals are in good shape. I think there's a lot to like about their future, but it's going to be tough. That division is going to be more difficult next year. I would think that the Bengals might not be quite as healthy on the defensive side of the ball. And certainly we saw, I mean, Joe Burrow has now suffered a serious injury to his knee in his first season. He got hurt here in the Super Bowl. I mean, he's going to have to take less hits for Joe Burrow to stay playing at a high level, you know, once you get past the first couple of years of his career.
Yeah, both the Bengals and 50 Cent reminding us of the fragility of our physical prime.
The mortality, yes, absolutely.
Yes. So, Bill, here we are. We made it. We broke the tape. We're lying on the ground, staring up at the sky, contemplating our mortality, as is our wont on these podcasts. And it occurs to me as I survey everything we've done this year that, like, we have had, my Lord, we've had, like, the whole vaccine news cycle. Like, Aaron Rodgers, I just remembered that we had Aaron Rodgers and cancel culture caskets as a major focal point of this year. But so much has happened since then, like the greatest postseason we've ever seen, you know, all of these close games, 17 games in 18 weeks. We saw fans in Las Vegas. We saw all of this genuinely disturbing, ugly stuff occurring off the field, both scandals relating to sexual misconduct and institutional racism, all of these off the field incidents involving players, which are horrific. So where are we, Bill? Like, when you look back at what this season gave us, what are you going to be thinking about?
I mean, I think this felt like the ultimate well, you're still going to watch, right? Season, you know, where it's just that feeling of, okay, like you can deal with multiple serious off-field allegations of racism. You can deal with the Washington football team or the Washington Commanders, I should say now, organization, basically conducting a quote-unquote independent investigation that they are now refusing to release the results of. I mean, just the NFL is exhausting in so many ways that, you know, maybe are inherent to the game of football, in many ways I think are not inherent to the game of football. And yet, if the product is still good, it's so difficult not to watch. And I think, you know, as we saw a game in a $5 billion stadium in a neighborhood that is, you know, being regenerated in some positive ways and also maybe disenfranchising people in other ways, by a team that was crassly moved out of St. Louis to come play in Los Angeles for a fan base that might not exist. Like, you know, in terms of how many actual Rams fans I saw, you know, moving around Los Angeles these past couple of days, and how more often I saw Bengals fans relative to Rams fans. You know, it just feels like, it really just feels like, okay, if the games are good, people are going to watch. And I think the ratings speak to that, certainly during the postseason. And I think the Super Bowl we saw, I mean, it was not necessarily the most exciting game at times, but it was competitive and it was a spectacle. And I think that the reality that football is a wildly entertaining spectacle for 3 hours, you know, every Sunday. And I think that we're going to keep battling with that and keep grappling with that for years to come. This just felt like maybe the most obvious and conspicuous example of that over the course of an entire season.
Yeah, it did feel like there was a moment at some point in the last couple years where it was like, man, is America really gonna like stop being addicted to football? And the answer resoundingly is absolutely not.
Now, Pablo, the only thing we are addicted to more than football are crypto commercials.
Yeah, my God. Bill Barnwell, as always, the real currency was the podcast we recorded along the way.
Well, Pablo, as you know, fortune favors the brave.
And oh, Lord. Oh, I look forward to seeing you again in our space museum.
Thank you, Pablo.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.